South by Southwest's cancellation may be just the tip of the iceberg. The warning from economists, the world's 10th largest economy should brace for impact. That story today on The Standard.
Texas Standard is a production of KUT Austin, KERA North Texas, Houston Public Media, and Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. With support from Rand Group, software delivered as promised. No surprises.
I'm David Brown. A discovery in Dallas County brings demands for a Super Tuesday recount. Also, a new state law designates all common spaces on public universities as public forums for free speech. Critics blame the new law for campus violence. And acts of dissent south of the border over the weekend as millions of women declare a feminist spring. All those stories and a whole lot more as the Texas Standard gets underway right after this. No matter where you are, you're on Texas Standard Time on this ninth day of March 2020. I'm David Brown. Great to have you with us. Here's a phrase you're going to be hearing a lot of in the Lone Star State if you haven't heard it a lot already. An abundance of caution. As in the announcement by U.S. Senator Ted Cruz over the weekend, who declared that, quote, out of an abundance of caution, he will be self-quarantining at home in Texas after discovering that during the recent Conservative Political Action Conference, or CPAC, he had a brief handshake with someone who later tested positive for the coronavirus. Cruz says he feels fine, thank you, but out of an abundance of caution, well, you get the idea. Ditto Rice University in Houston, which, out of an abundance of caution, canceled all classes this week. This decision coming a few days after word that an employee who had traveled abroad in February tested positive for the coronavirus. That employee was already under self-quarantine. The university says the shutdown between today and March 13th will allow faculty and staff time to prepare for the possibility of remote classes for the rest of the semester. And then there's this. Despite no COVID-19 cases in Austin or Travis County, an abundance of caution was cited behind a decision by the Austin mayor to declare a local disaster in the city, which was followed by the unprecedented cancellation of South by Southwest, that annual film and media and music confab that rakes in millions. More on that in just a moment. As of airtime Monday morning, a New York Times tracking map indicated 23 coronavirus cases in Texas, considerably fewer than in Washington State or California, where there are more than 100 cases in each. But all the caution in the world can't stop some of the ripple effects to the Texas economy, the 10th largest in the globe, by the way. The Texas Tribune's Julian Aguilar has been writing about the warnings coming from economists and others. Julian, welcome to the Texas Standard.
Thank you for having me on.
Texas uniquely vulnerable here, at least when it comes to its economy?
Yes. I mean, that's a simple answer. I mean, to what degree is still, I think, to be determined. And these are statistics from the governor's Mexico page on his website. You know, I mean, Texas exported just last year $350 billion. Granted, that's not, you know, just to Mexico, but I mean, just small things that we might not think about, how many times products go back and forth between Mexico and Texas and then back to Mexico for assembly. The thing that stands out that's most obvious right now is auto parts. So the economists, they're a little bit, you know, optimistic that we're not going to see a huge hit on bigger ticket items very soon. You know, supplies should be well stocked through the first quarter and even through halfway through the second, from what I understand. But as we all saw over the weekend, the oil war that the Saudis started, that's going to affect Texas big time. I mean, China's already a big purchaser of Texas oil. And even before the stock markets and the trading sort of went haywire over the weekend, economists were already saying that oil production was going to take a hit just because China is large parts of China are at a standstill, right? You know, if you don't have ships moving, if you don't have freight going, then they don't need that oil because they don't need that fuel. So that's just one aspect. But, you know, especially on the border economy, I mean, over the weekend, again, with the markets crashing and the price of oil sort of dipping. So all that taken into the big picture of everything going on will affect the border economy, which in turn will affect the rest of the Texas economy, sure.
I want to get back, though, to the border issues. It's not so much that Mexico has a lot of cases of coronavirus. It does not, in fact. A lot of this has to do with the greater supply chain, right?
Correct. Yeah, exactly. Thanks for pointing that out. You know, it's, you know, what does China's economy have to do with Texas-Mexico trade? Well, I mean, those maquilas, which is the term for the factories and the assembly lines that American companies are so fond of that are located in the borderlands in Mexico, most of their supplies come from China. So if they're at a standstill, they can't receive supplies. You know, what are the U.S. consumers and U.S. manufacturers that depend on that Mexican supply chain? What are those folks going to do while they're trying to figure all this out? And, you know, again, just what you alluded to with South by Southwest being canceled. I mean, there's a lot of cool stuff going on in Texas over the spring and over the summer that's going to get canceled. So that's just going to send, you know, shockwaves. But at least for what I'm seeing now, going to stores and just talking to folks, at least immediately, things that we've already seen, you know, that are being limited in purchase, you know, basic cleaning supplies and toilet paper and paper towels and things like that. Mm-hmm. Those on the shelves here, at least where I am in El Paso, those are still pretty well stocked. But it's what, you know, you folks in Austin and people in Dallas and folks down, I mean, across the state are kind of wondering when these supplies are going to stop, you know, coming in. So again, the day-to-day products, these economists that I talk to, they say they shouldn't see an immediate slowdown, but it's going to be, if this continues the way it goes, in the next couple of months, they'll be able to determine, you know, just how hard a hit this is going to be. And I mean, economists were already talking about, you know, so far in the future is when folks start stocking up for the Christmas season. You know, we're in early March right now. It seems so far away.
Right.
You got to think that these supply chains and these importers and these exporters, they start looking at that months and months ahead, which for us now is just a few months in the future. So that's going to be the, I think, the real sort of gauge on how bad this is going to be and for how long.
It's incredible how many jobs are tied to this, too. As you write for the Texas Tribune, about 1 million jobs in the Texas economy are dependent on international trade. And just trade with Mexico alone, which happens to be the U.S.'s largest trading partner, it's like $614 billion in two-way trade passing between these two countries, and the majority of it coming right through Texas and many of the ports, which are among the top 10 in the country. Read all about it over at texastribune.org. We're going to link to Julian's article over at texasstandard.org. Julian Aguilar covers all things Texas from his post out in El Paso. Julian, thanks so much for taking a couple of minutes out to talk with us on the Texas Standard.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me on.
I've gone ahead and declared a local disaster in the city, and associated with that, have issued an order that effectively cancels South by Southwest for this year.
There's that proclamation by Austin Mayor Steve Adler I was mentioning earlier. The cancellation of South by Southwest, for the first time since its founding in 1987, been making international headlines since the events draw in somewhat 400,000 attendees from around the world. But in the spirit of the show must go on, Andrew Weber of KUT is reporting some local businesses are trying to band together.
Saturday afternoon, Steve Sternshine was sitting alone at a bar. He hadn't eaten
Man,
all day.
You're the best.
Mix big bowl with what on there?
Everything except for broccoli.
The previous 24 hours weren't kind to the owner and operator of the Parish in the Empire Control Room, where he sat awaiting his food. The shock of the cancellation of South by Southwest was still fresh. It was a shock nobody, not even the festival organizers themselves, saw coming.
You know, when we all, everybody, like, even the South by people were, like, shocked. You know, like, no, everybody was watching on TV, like, they didn't, nobody knew that that was going to happen. We thought we had, like, dodged the bullet, you know? It was a crazy 24 hours because the severity of the issue is, like, unusual, but in terms of how it affected our businesses, like, you know, we just looked around and we're like, okay, new plan, let's go.
For Sternshine, that plan meant making up for the massive ripple of lost revenue and wages that would trickle down as a result of the city and county's joint declaration of a state of emergency that canceled the festival. Because the loss hits everyone, from club owners to artists to promoters to talent buyers to bartenders to stage managers, everybody. So Sternshine got everyone together and started a GoFundMe to raise $100,000 to pay for those losses, and 70 businesses signed on. Next, there was the issue of trying to salvage and reschedule all the live shows and day parties that were, at least officially, canceled. So he called a meeting and invited people to the Empire.
I'll turn it over to Steve. Thanks, y'all, for all coming out today. Really appreciate it. Just, you know, we're all under stress right now, so I'm really glad everyone could take a moment to come in here. Before we officially get started, I think it'd be
Steve and Cody Cowan head up the Red River Cultural District. They ran the meeting of roughly 30 business owners and venue operators on Saturday afternoon. Cowan told the group to think of this South By as a party, not a wake. Still, he didn't pull punches. People are going to lose money because of this cancellation.
Basically, all the workers and small businesses here make we'll say the lion's share of their money for the whole year. So you're going to see people who are going to have a hard time paying rent, both as businesses and as staff.
For Sternshine, South By accounts for a fifth of the overall revenue of the clubs he runs. And some venues paid double their rent during March because of South By. But to make this emergency plan work, everyone would need to put their egos and competing interests aside for the greater good. And the meeting Saturday went a long way toward accomplishing that goal. It started a discussion on how to share booking information, on whether to charge a flat fee for shows or have a donation-based system, and how to allocate all this money they're raising. But on top of all of this is the very real public health risk. So venues are stocking up on hand sanitizer. All the clubs and bars and restaurants are in close conversation with the city over how to be best prepared. But uncertainty still looms. The details aren't clear.
You know, we're going to get through this. It's going to suck. It's really scary, especially for the groups that are most at risk. But I think that, you know, the world is a f***ing scary place all the time. And there's so many different ways you can go. Part of the reason why we throw music events is to give people a break from, you know, the harsh reality that we're hurtling through space, you know, at millions of miles an hour on this little rock, you know. And we're just specks of dust. So, yeah, coronavirus, whatever. It's just another thing. That's what I think.
Sternshine and the other venues hope to finalize their unofficial shows before next week, when South by Southwest Music was officially supposed to kick off. In Austin, for the Texas Standard, I'm Andrew Weber.
Okay, let's find out what social media is buzzing about on this Monday. Here's our social media editor, Wells Dunbar.
Hi, David. Yes, the coronavirus prompted cancellation of Austin's South by Southwest sent shockwaves throughout social media. Here's what some of our friends and listeners are saying. Via our Facebook page, Andrea Pobans says, I think it was the right decision. What I think we can all do now is to be more adamant about shopping local and supporting local artists. A little goes a long way. Dan Hummel says the service industry in Austin relies on these weeks so much it's difficult to fathom how many people could be economically devastated. Uber drivers, bartenders, Airbnb renters, musicians, and more. The list is immense. And Christopher Waters adds, it's looking like several Austin venues and promoters are still moving forward with some plans for South by Southwest, echoing some of what we just heard there. More local acts, less corporate involvement, and no wristbands could mean that some people set to work or perform might still make a few ends meet. Let's hope so, David. Obviously a developing story we'll hear much more about in the weeks to come.
The emergency declaration makes it easier for some to declare right off in their insurance, of course. So that's a major factor here. We'd love to hear what you think of all of this. Tweet us right now, at Texas Standard. Wells back in 35.
Support for Texas Standard comes from the Texas College Savings Plan, administered by the state of Texas. Families can save for tuition, room and board, books, and other qualified education expenses at eligible schools nationwide. Learn more at texascollegesavings.com. Support for Texas Standard comes from Texas Oncology, with a reminder that March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. Screening can lead to early detection and is recommended for all men and women age 50 and older. More at texasoncology.com.
Hey, it's a Texas Standard. I'm David Brown. You've probably seen the snaps on Twitter or Instagram. Store shelves stripped amid coronavirus concerns. Published reports say people are stocking up on supplies they might need if they have to stay home for weeks. But stocking up costs money, and not everyone can afford everyday basics, let alone in bulk. That's an issue some nonprofits are trying to address, including a food bank in San Antonio, which normally serves nearly 60,000 people a week. Texas Public Radio's Bonnie Petrie reports.
It's library quiet in the waiting room at the San Antonio Food Bank, where clients come to sign up for food assistance. It's empty, except for a staffer and Carol Lisette Castilla, who's filling out forms. Like most Americans, she has coronavirus on her mind.
It is kind of worrying because when you have kids, you always think about them first, you know? And the mom can always wait, but not the kids.
She's heard the food bank might be able to help with her coronavirus necessities list.
Sanitizers, wipes and stuff like that, and canned food, like tuna, you know, stuff like that. It's already prepared.
On the other side of the building, scattered volunteers and food bank president Eric Cooper are hard at work.
So this is the room where we pack the boxes and get them ready to go out to families, and lots of different non-perishable food items are donated to us, and they need to be inspected, they need to be categorized, and then they need to be put in a box that would ultimately get to a family.
Cooper says their clients, low-income families and fixed-income older folks, are vulnerable in a time of crisis.
They don't have a pantry full of food. Their refrigerator's empty, and the thought of being prepared for a crisis like this can be overwhelming.
Not only can't they stock up on food, but public benefits like SNAP don't cover non-food supplies like hand sanitizer and wipes and bleach. So the food bank is putting together what Cooper calls prevention and preparedness packages,
which is a little bit more food than we would normally give, with more non-food items like those cleaning supplies that we think can really help those families.
To make this happen, Cooper estimates they'll need 15 million extra pounds of goods, donations of food and money. And one more thing.
We're standing in our sorting room, and there's some amazing volunteers, but to be honest, this room's usually packed. We've seen a decline in some of our volunteers showing up.
It's not because San Antonio has suddenly become a less altruistic city. Cooper says volunteers, too, are afraid of the virus. It's become an issue for food banks across the country, especially in places like Seattle, as more people stay home. Those sorting food in San Antonio today are, so far, undeterred.
We have sanitizers all over through here, so no, we're not even worried about that at all.
One of them's connected their phone to a guitar amp, and Richard Poley is jamming out to Queen as he sorts. So I ask, what if coronavirus starts to spread in San Antonio?
I would still come. Yeah, no, as long as I can help. I mean, I was in the military, so I mean, as long as I'm kicking, as long as I'm breathing, I'm going to, like, fight the good fight, so.
Food Bank President Eric Cooper says, in the event of some sort of quarantine in the city, they'll need a lot more volunteers to get food to people who need it.
Many of our distributions are mobile. They're in urban and rural settings. They might be in a parking lot. We do drive-throughs. And so those are all the strategies that we'll be invoking to try to get people food.
Which is all quite reassuring to San Antonio Food Bank client Carol Lisette Castilla.
It gives like peace and rest, you know.
The San Antonio Food Bank hopes to distribute 300,000 prevention and preparedness packages over the next month. I'm Bonnie Petrie in San Antonio.
Support for coverage of business comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping companies protect their drivers on the road. More at worksafetexas.com/onthejob.
And you are listening to the Texas Standard. A program in North Texas designed to bring nurses into the homes of some first-time moms, according to organizers, is being underutilized. Although this program offers a free first appointment with a nurse, some of the very people this program is supposed to benefit say they can't afford any follow-up care. As KERA contributor Sujatha Dand reports, a hospital is trying to remedy that discrepancy.
Hey, good to see you.
Nurse Evie Bardet steps out of the cold and into Jasmine Viatoro's warm Dallas apartment. Viatoro pulls out a giant binder filled with notes.
The other day, like, I wanted to ask you.
She's just a couple of weeks away from her due date and wants to be prepared. Her last pregnancy ended in a miscarriage.
Like, my stomach was starting to get tight.
Okay.
Bardet spends the next hour answering all of Viatoro's questions.
When I go to the doctor, like, they just go by really, really fast. And so sometimes I have questions that I don't understand, but I'm glad that, you know, I have Evie, that she prepares me.
That's just one of the goals of what's known as the Nurse Family Partnership. The program helps vulnerable first-time moms during their pregnancies and the postpartum phase. It's also designed to support them and their babies during infancy and early childhood.
These nurses often are, if not the only, one of the few people that are in these young moms' corner.
Kate Rose Marcus is the CEO of Wings, a Dallas nonprofit that helps low-income women. Wings is the largest administrator of the Nurse Family Partnership in Texas.
The data shows that without support like this, the incidences of low birth weight are so much higher, which leads to infant illness and mortality. The incidences of complicated pregnancies and health risks for the mom are so much higher without this program.
9 out of 10 women who participate in the Nursed Family Partnership in Texas deliver full-term, healthy-weight babies. However, Parkland's Vice President of Nursing, Marjorie Quint Boussed, says that the program doesn't always reach moms in the southeast part of Dallas County, where the maternal mortality rate is among the highest in the country.
Texas has struggles with maternal mortality higher than others in the nation, and most predominantly impacting African American women.
Hi, Cody. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
Ashley Bradley is a nurse who has been covering Southeast Dallas County for several years. She says it's hard to keep new moms in the program since most are the primary breadwinners for their families.
We do everything we can to work with them. Sometimes we'll go meet them on their lunch break.
But that's not always an option. The cost of medical care is a problem, too. Most maternal deaths in Texas happen more than 60 days postpartum. And Parkland's Marjorie Quint Boussed says that's when moms with pregnancy Medicaid lose their coverage. 60 days after giving birth.
Cardiovascular disease, it just doesn't go away because you've delivered. If you don't have insurance or a way, a funding source, it's really not a good choice because they cannot afford it.
That's why Parkland is covering health care for new moms for 12 months after they deliver. Quint Boussed couldn't say how much that would cost, but medications for chronic conditions like hypertension are not particularly expensive, especially compared to ER visits or even emergency surgery.
Make sure we're getting an accurate reading.
For women like Jasmine Villatoro, a nurse coming to her house means care, attention, and peace of mind.
I'm so excited. I can't wait to tell my husband it's time to go to the hospital and, have baby in my arms.
And knowing her medical care is guaranteed during those uncertain months ahead means she can put all her energy into bonding with baby. In Dallas, I'm Sujatha Dand.
Support for Texas Standard comes from White Mountain Bulgarian Yogurt, family owned and operated in Austin, Texas for 40 years. Learn about the value of eating traditional Bulgarian yogurt at whitemountainfoods.com, available in the dairy aisle. Support for Texas Standard comes from TCU, where Horned Frogs strive to be responsible world citizens. More on how a trip to Norway challenged students' perspectives on mass incarceration and justice at tcu.edu/stories.
From the Texas Newsroom, I'm Joseph Leahy. More coronavirus evacuees are bound for San Antonio's Lackland Air Force Base. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services announced Sunday about 100 passengers from the Grand Princess cruise ship will be arriving in Texas for quarantine as early as tonight. The ship has anchored for several days off the California coast after more than 20 people fell ill from coronavirus. Bexar County Judge Nelson Wolf says he hopes federal officials have learned from their mistakes in handling the first round of people quarantined at Lackland last month.
They will stay on the base and not be transported around the city of San Antonio. So I personally feel a lot more confident about it, assuming all these things get done that they say they will do.
Last week, one evacuee was released in San Antonio, but then returned to quarantine after testing positive for the virus. Meanwhile, Rice University in Houston is canceling all in-person classes and undergraduate labs this week after an employee tested positive for COVID-19. The university on Sunday announced the move would help prevent spreading the virus and allow faculty and staff time to prepare for possible remote instruction this semester. The employee was infected while traveling in Egypt last month. Starting today, all cases of detained unaccompanied children at the Houston Immigration Court will be heard via video teleconference. Texas Public Radio's Lauren Terrazas has more.
The pilot program is part of the Trump administration's efforts to fast-track court proceedings of minors in federal custody. Unaccompanied migrant children will appear in a Houston courtroom, and their testimony will be streamed to an Immigration and Customs Enforcement prosecutor and judge in Atlanta. The program is expected to last for at least 2 months and could potentially mark the first step in establishing a single national video teleconference for all unaccompanied migrant children. Immigration judges will have 60 days to make a decision on each case. I'm Lauren Terrazas in Austin.
The Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission is once again targeting underage drinking as thousands of college students take off for spring break this month. TABC spokesman Chris Porter says agents have increased undercover compliance operations at bars, restaurants, and liquor stores near major colleges and universities.
We'll be doing operations pretty much all month long at locations all across the state. So more than likely, any given 24-hour period, we'll probably see a few dozen operations taking place.
Porter says TABC is also focusing on businesses in popular spring break destinations, including Galveston and South Padre Island. And the U.S.'s benchmark oil stock is reeling as Saudi Arabia pledges to cut prices and flood the market. That's after the world's cartel of major oil-producing countries and Russia failed to reach an agreement on Friday in response to the coronavirus outbreak. At last check, West Texas Intermediate was trading nearly 17% down at about $34.
You got to tune to the Texas Standard. Last week, on the day after the Superest of Tuesdays for Joe Biden, the New York Times took note of a question a lot of Texans were asking, especially in Harris County. Why did it take so long to vote? In places like a polling station at the historically black Texas Southern University, it took some up to 7 hours to cast a ballot. Election officials said the long waits reflected last-minute surges of undecided voters and glitches in election procedures. But in a state with some of the strictest voting requirements in the nation and a history of courts finding intentional efforts at voter suppression, the state Democratic Party doesn't see the long lines as quite benign at all. In fact, Democrats are suing the state in federal court right now, charging that Republican lawmakers changed voting laws as recently as last year to intentionally cause longer waiting times at polling places that serve Hispanic and black voters. Last week, we talked about this with one of the attorneys for the Democrats. Today, we are joined by James Dickey. He is of Austin, and he is chairman of the Republican Party of Texas. Mr. Dickey, welcome to the Texas Standard.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
The claim here is that the elimination of one-punch or straight-ticket voting in Texas is aimed at suppressing the votes of people of color because, as a class, they can't afford the longer waits that are inevitable once you remove single-punch voting. How would you respond to that? How does the party intend to respond?
Well, it is absurd and offensive, but unfortunately it is par for the course for Democrats. First of all, the vast majority of actual intentional voter suppression that happened under Jim Crow laws under Democrat leadership. And so fortunately, we've had Republican leadership for the last 17 years, and we have seen dramatic improvements and increases in minority vote and turnout. The irony is they're trying to use the example of this primary vote as an argument for straight ticket voting. There never has been straight ticket voting in primary votes. You can't have straight ticket voting in primary votes.
Sure.
And so to use this ballot and this election as an example and a basis for their claim just shows how baseless their claims are.
Of course, this straight ticket voting or single punch voting would take effect in November of this year. Why, though, make the change?
Yeah, it always only has been available in the general election.
Right, right. Why make the change, though, knowing that this would inevitably mean longer lines and longer waits?
There are only 7 states in the country that are left with straight ticket voting. It is not an unreasonable position, and it certainly is not any kind of an aggressive position to say it would be wiser for voters to register an actual opinion on each of the races rather than blindly accept an entire slate. And the reality is you can still vote for everyone in the same party. You just simply go down the ballot and select everyone in the same party. And if that is your intention and you're not putting any thought into those races, the amount of extra time to do so is minuscule. Hmm.
The Texas Tribune reports that over the past 4 presidential cycles, election cycles, one-punch voting has generally proved more popular among Democrats in Texas's 10 largest counties. Was that part of the calculus? Was that something that...
Yeah, and there is evidence that the Democrat Party was relying on training people heavily to do straight ticket voting as opposed to getting the word out about their candidates. That was a strategy they chose to implement, but it did not mean it was necessarily better or necessarily inherent. It was an approach they were using. It's an approach that's not any more available, as it's not available in 43 other states. And courts have repeatedly found that, yes, legislatures get to decide how votes are cast.
Chad Dunn, who's general counsel for the Texas Democratic Party, was talking with us last week, and he said that, last Tuesday, there was one of the biggest problems was that in some counties, particularly Harris County, Republicans had pushed to have an equal number of Democratic and Republican voting machines at polling locations. And that turned out to be a problem, especially in places where Democratic voters outnumbered Republicans, like at Texas Southern University. It sounds like you've heard that complaint.
Yeah, and actually it is a patently false complaint. And in fact, our platform argues that we ought to have completely separate primary management. But we argued publicly that you ought to use historical voting trends to decide the ratios of machines at each polling location. And again, the Democrat leadership in charge in Dallas and in Harris counties decided to go one-to-one because they thought that was most fair when we all were warning them that it was going to guarantee problems.
We wanted to give James Dickey of Austin, he's chairman of the Republican Party of Texas, an opportunity to talk about some of the issues that were discussed last week when we had Chad Dunn, general counsel of the Texas Democratic Party, on the air. Mr. Dickey, thanks so much for taking a few minutes out to talk with us on the Texas Standard. We certainly do appreciate it.
It is my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Support for Texas Standard comes from the Texas ABLE program, helping eligible Texans with disabilities save and plan for the future to pay for qualified disability expenses with a tax-advantaged ABLE account. Learn more at texasable.org. Support comes from Texas Children's Hospital, focused on outcomes and care, and providing treatment to kids in the Lone Star State and beyond for more than 60 years. Texas Children's Hospital, personalized care for every child. More at texaschildrens.org.
It's the Texas Standard. I'm David Brown. A discovery in Dallas County causing concern for election officials who are now asking a court to order a recount of Super Tuesday ballots. This after the county's election administrator said 44 machines that tabulate votes were not included in last week's initial tally. KERA's Christopher Connolly has more.
Elections Administrator Tony Pippins-Poole says the ballots went uncounted for a couple of reasons. Some thumb drives containing tallies from the machines arrived late to a central vote counting site, while some others came from machines that weren't scheduled to be used in this election, but were used anyway. Now she wants authorization to count the missed votes from 44 machines and incorporate them into the election results. It's not clear if the uncounted ballots would offer enough votes to sway any of the races in the Democratic or Republican primaries. There were more than 450 vote centers open on Super Tuesday across Dallas County, and each site had one or more of these machines. Last year, Dallas County bought voting machines that print a paper backup ballot for every digital ballot, and it's those paper ballots that'll be used for the recount. I'm Christopher Connolly in Fort Worth.
Texas Senate Bill 18 designated all common spaces on public universities to be public forums for the purposes of free speech. These spaces are now open to the public to share any message that doesn't incite violence. Texas Public Radio's Dominic Anthony reports on perceptions about the effect of the new law on the state's public campuses.
Last year, President Donald Trump signed an executive order that restricts funding to universities that try to moderate free speech. Soon after, Texas passed Senate Bill 18, which goes further. With few exceptions, the law prohibits public universities from controlling speech in outdoor common spaces. UTSA students recently experienced the impact of the new law.
Here we are at a new campus, University of Texas, San Antonio. Remember the Alamo? Bunch of wild Mexicans here wanted to kill us.
Cindy and Jed Smock are Christian preachers from Indiana. They just wrapped up a tour of Texas campuses like UTSA. SB 18 allowed them to do that, to tread on new ground.
Well, it's had a big impact in that I've been coming to Texas since 1976 preaching, and I was never able to preach on campus at University of Texas at Austin or at
University of Texas in San Antonio.
You can become real men, like me, like Jesus, like Donald Trump.
The couple has traveled all 50 states over the past four decades, preaching their interpretation of the gospel.
We are proclaiming the gospel that Jesus died for our sins and he rose again.
I reached Cindy Smock by phone. She was driving through a rainstorm in Georgia. When she and her husband preach, the couple focuses on college students.
They're the future leaders of America.
They often use provocative tactics to get attention. Jed Smock sometimes holds a sign that reads anus awareness.
I was using a little humor, but we need to be aware of the anus. It's not a sexual organ.
The Smocks say they are not trying to single out any one group.
We're not Westboro Baptist Church. We're not on campus to protest homosexuality. It's mainly the homosexuals that make it an issue when we're there.
And many students who hear these messages, especially LGBT students, say the speech can be alienating and hurtful.
So for me personally, I tend to have pretty thick skin when it comes to things like these, but the reason why I go out and protest is because I can just imagine what it would be like to, say, be somebody who's closeted gay, hearing those things.
Xenia Flowers is a senior at UTSA, and she's the secretary of Spectrum, an LGBT student group. She joined a counter-protest against Jed and Cindy Smock.
Because obviously we can't prevent them from having their free speech on campus due to the law, but I just at least want to let people know that they're there so that they can avoid them if they need to.
Linus Owens is an associate professor of sociology at Middlebury College in Vermont. He says there is a tension between free speech and inclusivity.
Free expression, as you mentioned, right, becomes about inclusivity of ideas and ideologies. But like the activist side tends to privilege kind of inclusivity, a kind of embodied inclusivity, that is, i.e. people, groups, communities, etc.
On the one hand, free speech is essential to democracy, to the marketplace of ideas. For some people, that means no censorship whatsoever. But on the other hand, not everyone has equal access to the marketplace of ideas. Historically, for example, people who talk openly about being gay have faced discrimination and sometimes violence. So, in the past, some Texas universities have moderated speech on their campuses to make sure students feel safe to express themselves.
And of course, the prevailing philosophy on campus is multiculturalism or pluralism, where you can't say one philosophy or one religion is better than another.
Jed and Cindy Smock don't share this pluralistic philosophy.
And we're not only saying, is Christianity better? We're saying it's the only way.
In a written statement, UTSA acknowledged the concerns of its students, but also said it was important to, quote, foster a culture of tolerance for the opinions of others, even when they may be offensive or disturbing. But Owens says people often forget that many students call campus home.
I mean, again, the irony of this is that we wouldn't expect it at our workplace, and yet students have to pay for the privilege to be on a campus where they don't feel safe.
In the most general context, it makes us feel like we're not at our own campus.
Katerina Svetskova is a senior at UTSA and was present when the preachers arrived.
And for a lot of students that like live on campus, this is their home. And so we feel attacked, like obviously verbally, by these things when we're just like trying to go to class and enjoy our everyday life.
People can feel unsafe without violence being threatened to them. And I think that those concerns have to be not dismissed. They have to be taken quite seriously.
And at UTSA, the speech did turn into violence.
He put her hands on her. Whoa!
In a video posted to Twitter, Jed Smock shoves a student to the ground after she knocks his phone out of his hands. Three students who were there told TPR that another member of Smock's group punched two other students. This year, Cindy and Jed Smock visited seven Texas universities. They say they're done in Texas for now, but they plan on coming back next year. In the meantime, anyone else can say just about anything they want in any outdoor common space of the state's public universities. I'm Dominic Anthony in San Antonio.
Beyond South By, maybe if online petitions carry weight. The Houston Chronicle reports that some 8,000 people have signed on to one calling for Rodeo Houston to be canceled over coronavirus concerns. The event kicked off on March 3rd, scheduled to run through the 22nd. Officials for the rodeo say right now there are no plans to cancel it, citing the fact that unlike South By, the rodeo is primarily a local event. Houston Mayor Sylvester Turner backed up those sentiments in a tweet on Friday. As they say on the radio, stay tuned. Coming up on 49 minutes past the hour, Texas Standard Times. A whole lot more of the Standard ahead. Stay with us.
Support for Texas Standard comes from Texas CASA, advocating for a safe and positive future for all Texas children in the child protection system. Volunteer information at becomeacasa.org. Every child has a chance. It's you. Support for Texas Standard comes from Rand Group, partnering with small and mid-sized companies by helping to unify their businesses and achieve digital transformation. More at randgroup.com. Software delivered as promised. No surprises.
It's Texas Standard Time. I'm David Brown. You may have heard the term femicide. It's more than just a term to describe the killing of a woman. It's a hate crime term based on gender, that is, the intentional killing of a female because of her gender. Yesterday, on International Women's Day, an historic uprising in Mexico City, as thousands of women took to the streets demanding change. Published reports have called it one of the biggest feminist demonstrations in all of Mexico's history. They chanted, "Not one more murder, and if he hits you, he doesn't love you." They spray-painted buildings, threw red dye into public fountains, and demanded an end to gender-based killings and violence. Melissa Del Bosque has been covering this. She's a journalist based in Mexico City, a ProPublica contributor, and the author of Bloodlines. Melissa, welcome back to the Texas Standard.
Sure, thanks for having me.
These protests are front-page news in Mexico, though you were telling me that as you were getting your kids off to school, you discovered that it was eerily quiet outside. Are the two related?
Well, yes. I mean, a general women's strike has been called for today in Mexico. So a lot of businesses, universities, schools are shut down today in solidarity with International Women's Day and women's rights and against the femicides and against the increase in violence. So it's pretty remarkable today in a city of more than 20 million. It's quieter than a Sunday today. There's no traffic in the streets. I'm in the southern part of the city.
Uh-huh.
Schools are closed down. My son's school is open today, but I would say maybe a quarter of the students are there. Most of the girls stayed home.
Gee.
So it's pretty amazing.
Let's talk about some of the underlying causes for this uprising. I understand that there have been something like 3,800 femicides in recent months.
Yeah, the number of femicides has more than doubled in the last 5 years. And they say right now, on average, about 10 women are killed a day in Mexico. It's not as bad as it is in Central America, but it's certainly grown. Notably, there's been some very especially awful cases in recent weeks, which really ignited the protests yesterday and then the general strike today. And there was the abduction of a 7-year-old girl named Fatima from her school, where she was sexually abused and killed. And then there was another young woman named Ingrid who was killed by her husband and then skinned and disemboweled. And then the pictures were put in the newspaper. Some of the photos were leaked, I think, by the police. Women were outraged, of course, and that really helped ignite the protests.
One would think that everyone would be outraged by stories like this.
Everybody is, for sure.
Is this getting the attention of the president, Andrés Manuel López Obrador?
Well, he's sort of made things worse. I was just watching his press conference this morning, and he has blamed this on his, political opponents. Someone asked him if he was a feminist, and he said, "I'm a humanist." So today he sort of was very roundabout. He said, "My respects to the women who protested yesterday. But, if you want to overthrow the government, wait for the next election." A small contingent of protesters where these women are like dressed in black and they have, they throw Molotov cocktails and they spray paint national monuments and things like that. So there was a little bit of that yesterday. So he, you know, he commented on that. But that's a very small part of the overall protest movement.
I've been reading some stories in the international press that suggest that there are some in Mexico who believe that this could be a kind of women's spring uprising, the start of something like that.
Well, I definitely think so. I mean, I think today makes a big statement. You know, I mean, the streets of Mexico City right now are a ghost town. This makes a huge statement. Women are becoming more empowered and they're pushing back and they're asking for change, because the change isn't coming. There's been promises, but it hasn't been enacted. And I think, you know, people see it happen in one country and then they take their hope and inspiration from other movements that they're seeing around the world.
Melissa Del Bosque is a journalist based in Mexico City. She's a ProPublica contributor and the author of the book Bloodlines. Melissa, thanks so much for spending a few minutes with us on The Standard today.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
And you are listening to the Texas Standard. Well, let's check in once again with our social media editor, Wells Dunbar. What are you seeing out there, Wells?
United States Senator from Texas, Ted Cruz, under that self-imposed quarantine we heard about earlier, yes, after encountering an attendee at the Conservative Political Action Conference, or CPAC, who tested positive for COVID-19. Interesting news here from Cruz. In that statement, he said that he has no current symptoms, and medical authorities have advised him that odds of transmission from the other individual to him were extremely low. Lots of speculation about who that individual may be, because they were in the CPAC green room and apparently interacted with several other speakers there as well. On Facebook, Roxanne Hernandez says that while she doesn't agree with Cruz's politics, she's happy to see him setting a good example. Meanwhile, Julie Killingsworth asks, shouldn't they at least test him? I think pointing there to some of these issues with the sparse number of tests for the COVID virus out there. Interesting for Cruz there. You know, I wonder if we can expect some extra podcast episodes from the guy now that he's going to be at home for a little while.
Well,
wouldn't be surprised.
Who knows?
He does have that picking up and taking off. Also, things going on there. We heard about that free fall in oil prices, essentially looking at an oil glut resulting from this disagreement between Saudi Arabia and Russia over production, which sent crude oil prices plummeting, kind of happening at the worst time imaginable for such a thing. In the Houston area, we got an interesting tweet from Real World 2018. They tweet us their predictions of layoffs, slashed budgets for training, delayed construction projects, no further raises or bonuses, potentially temp workers let go. She says the domino effects are mind-boggling in the energy corridor of Houston.
It's kind of mind-boggling, frankly, that West Texas Intermediate, which is the benchmark here, it reached us down close to the lower $27 a barrel level, which is like a four-year low. It's just astonishing. And you think about the possible ripple effects there, because people start to sell off at that point just out of panic. So that's something that we really need to watch here in the
definitely. And we're going to see potential state budget ramifications. Interesting tweet here from the Texas Politics Project's Jim Henson, friend of the show, been on a bunch. He's talking about the projections that we use in the state budget. Jim tweets, projected oil price per barrel used in the comptroller's biennial revenue estimate. We, as Texas, we do these budgets every 2 years. In 2020, it projected $50 a barrel. 2021 projected $53 a barrel. At last check today, $33.79. Quite a gap there, $20 or so.
Houston Chronicle already calling this an oil crash, and they say on their front page what oil crash means for thousands of Houston jobs. So we may be just scratching the surface here. Listen, we'd love to hear what's making news in your neck of Texas. Tweet us, won't you, at Texas Standard. Just look for us on your social media platform of choice. You know how that works. Wells Dunbar, our social media editor, is always on the lookout for your comments so that he can share some of the best ones with other listeners. And, of course, we're online, texasstandard.org. You can keep up with the news 24/7 right there. Out of time for the big broadcast. We'll be back here tomorrow. We hope you'll join us. Till then, I'm David, along with Wells, wishing you a marvelous Monday.
Philanthropic support for Texas Standard comes from Casey and Scott O'Hare, the Winkler Family Foundation, Lynn Dobson and Greg Woldridge, Adrian Killam, and the George Huntington Family.